episode of Plot Chope, talking with Spencer Pratt, reality TV legend, also longtime jiu-jitsu practitioner. Jump into all kinds of topics from collecting geese to starting training in the Palisades with Hickson in his garage and all kinds of other cool stuff and stories about Kim Kardashian fixing closets for Heidi and all kinds of things. So without further ado, let's jump right in. This one, we got the man, the myth, the legend, Spencer Pratt in here. Spence, thanks for jumping on, man.
Oh my gosh, honored. I canceled my empty schedule for this one. I was like, woo! In real life, though, not to give myself imaginary clout, but I would say I say no to 3 podcasts a day because, there's a lot of podcasts in the COVID world. So, and I have not done any of them. So that's the type of juice. That's the type of juice my kimono plug has.
Hey, now I'm feeling extra, extra honored because I already know you're not jumping on if you don't have to jump on. So thank you for jumping on. I'm super stoked to have you and jump in. So
I don't even do my own podcast anymore. I'm like 8 weeks behind. So there's the level, but I listened to your incredible podcast with Jason Khalifa. I could be saying his name wrong, all due respect. And that's why I texted you and that's why we started talking podcasts. But I want to thank you for all the knowledge you dropped because the crystal brand that my wife and I have is pretty much inspired by your grind, your hustle, what we witnessed watching you and your team. And then it was such breaking news today to hear that you've now come to a conclusion where you want to have kimonos available for up to 3 months of, maybe not the super exclusive drop, but I called my wife, I was like, breaking news, we need to change the formula because we're always trying to chase the OG, show your role where it would sell out in a few seconds. And Heidi's like, we have product on the site. And I'm like, I don't know how they ran this business model because if we don't have stuff to sell and we're, chasing this like hype beast energy. So I was glad to be able to tell her. Bear says you could have, product can sit for a few months. She's like, wow, really?
No, you guys are, I'm watching from afar and you guys are killing it. It's like, we're going to jump in a little bit into Pratt Daddy crystals and stuff later. But I appreciate all the stuff you're saying, man. But let's jump into you, man. Let's jump into you and we'll get into all kinds of stuff. But give most people don't know, but like you're heavy into jiu-jitsu and you've been into jiu-jitsu for a long time and grappling. So like a 5-minute summary, like what was your deal, man? Give me a start to finish, your teachers, where, when, how, but till now.
Gotcha. So when I was 15 years old in Pacific Palisades, my next door neighbor, Susie Taylor, shout out, she was dating this. I actually didn't know. I just thought it was, I was just naive and didn't know the world at all. I was like, oh, it's just this guy. But he ended up being this Brazilian guy. And we'd always be hanging out and, he'd be like, go get some beers from your parents' house. And he was just like the cooler, older. So he's probably a few years older than me. And he'd be like, go get the beers. And I'd be like, what do you do with them? Like, I wasn't even drinking them. I was like, whatever, tough, cool guy. And he started, putting me in arm bars. And I was like, what's this? And he's like, and then put me in a choke. I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, this is my family's art. This is, I'll teach it to you. He's like, come to my house. So my mom would drop me off on, what's that street? Coastline. It's right over there by now Mastro's Ocean Club. And I'd be in this garage training with this kid and his dad. And I would complain to my mom, like, I can't understand the dad. Like, I don't know what he's saying. Ends up, I'm in Hickson Gracie's garage with Hawks and Gracie.
Wild.
And I just didn't even know what was happening. Maybe the internet had coders on it, but there was no internet in the sense there was no YouTube, there was no Instagram, there's no
Wikipedia. What year was this, Spencer, roughly? What year?
Well, I'm 37 now, so I'm real bad at math. I was 15 then, so you got to calculate.
Shit, that's what was that? That's like six-ish, seven-ish, roughly.
Not even gonna pretend to do math here.
Me either. I'm just guessing off of like when I started jiu-jitsu, my age versus yours. I'm not even doing math. So I graduated. I think it's right around there though.
Yeah, I graduated high school in 2002. So yeah, definitely late 90s then.
Okay.
And so then I was like, okay, you know, and he's like, come to the classes. So then Hickson had a school in town in this next to the Jerry Blank's karate dojo. He shared the little unit. And so I just started going there, you know, as much as, you know, jiu-jitsu wasn't like how it is now where people train like professional athletes. Like you'd go maybe twice a week and you'd have a class, and maybe there'd be class on Saturday. So, you know, I think it was like 3 days a week and then class on Saturday. And then I started getting better at it. And then my buddy Soderberg Stone, who was like the big goon bully in the neighborhood, I put him in a choke or something that he couldn't get out of in front of a bunch of our buddies. And then he was like, what is this? And then I got him hooked. And then he got his whole crew of, you know, little thugs all in the, you know, the dojo. And that's when the kind of the jits mob in the Palisades started with, you know, and Crone was probably 9, 10, 12. I don't know. Crone was very young, but still the scariest little kid you didn't want a problem with. You'd be like, go away, little kid that hurt me. So I was in that academy all the way until this kid that started training was a little hater because I had this high school girlfriend that he liked or was in love with, da, da, da. And I was in this little magazine for this little photo shoot, some stupid little YM thing, you know, for him to care that much. I'm happy about it. I don't think it's stupid, but it's enough for him to feel affected. And he put up a bunch of the magazine little articles around town and like drew dicks on my face. And so at the time, the instructor, the brown belt was Chago Vela, who was, you know, incredible jiu-jitsu guy, but his brother ended up being more notable and famous, Gabriel Vela. I think he, you know, won some major tournaments, you know, later on in the years. But so this instructor kind of punked this kid that did this to me. And so Hickson was like, hey, you can't be at the academy anymore. And so my loyalty was the dude that like defended me. So I kind of started my own little academy at my house in the courtyard and got mats there. And all the my buddies that weren't training at the academy, you know, that didn't want to join like a martial arts academy would just come. We all scrap in the courtyard. So I did that for years until I went to college and then brought my mats to USC to, you know, the parking garage at the Medici, and Chago and I were still training. And I had a group of guys still coming there. But then Chago got into a little, you know, little problems or whatever, and had to leave the country and go back to Brazil. So that's when I was like, I got to keep training, you know, I want to get this purple belt. So I researched around downtown LA, and the closest jiu-jitsu was at LA Boxing Club. And it was this guy named, it's spelled Wander Braga.
Braga.
Yeah, but it's Wander, but it, you know.
Wander Braga.
And he was, you know, doing cage fighting, you know, and I was going driving to Indian reservations and watching him do real deal MMA scraps and winning with jiu-jitsu. I was like, this is the guy. So we turned, I had like at least 5,000 square foot, like ridiculous loft on Skid Row in downtown because it was so cheap back then, but it was a penthouse, insane. But you're, again, living on Skid Row is below you. But we turned the whole thing into mats and just trained. You know, I would invite all the guys in college, you know, all the tough guys on the football team, and we'd all just literally scrap it out because I got to the point where this is when nobody knew jiu-jitsu. So I was like, freaking everybody was challenging me. At one time, there was one of my buddies was on this football team, and there was a couple of bloods from like the whatever gardens that, you know, out of training day. So a few of the bloods that thought they could wrestle, they all came over and I put the smoke on them. Again, I'm not saying I was the best pearl belt in the world, but nobody knew what jiu-jitsu was. It was like, I still have friends that hate jiu-jitsu now because everyone knows what it is. And it's not like a secret moves that they can put on people, and everyone's seen it now in the UFC. And so this is when it was still like secretive, like people didn't know what jiu-jitsu was. And so then I thought I was so good that I went with Bonder to do the worlds in Brazil as a purple belt. And I roll up into the Baja Tijuca tennis club or whatever. And no joke, this is back in the day when IBJJF or whatever, the rule, now you have to have, they check your gi. Back then they didn't check gis. And actual, Chago used to tell me what they would do in Brazil. You would have one training gi that you'd always train and have as dirty as possible. The worst smelling gi you could ever imagine. If you smelled it, it was like just instant throw up. And that would be like your competition gi. I walked into this tennis club. I swear to this day, I remember the smell. I couldn't even breathe. And I was in the,
you couldn't breathe.
I was in the like corral area where everyone's supposed to, I literally was just like, I'm it. I can't do, I'm sensitive. I'm going to throw up. I said, I'm not cut out for this competition.
This life.
At the world. You know, rewind. I did a blue belt competition, the Pan Ams as a blue belt, which I got smoked and I was like, oh my God. And, you know, I just competing for the first time is so intense when you're, you know, I was probably 18, 19, and they're like, this is a grown man with tattoos, strong, like coming out. You're like, whoa, like this is a street fight back then. Like it was just, it was so heavy for me at the time. I wasn't ready. So now I think I'm ready. So I back out of that one, just end up spending like 2 months in Brazil, just living the good life, training over at Carlos Gracie's spot. Ends up, you know, funny thing is that one of the guys I was training with, you know, the big legend at the time, he ended up jacking my girlfriend that I brought to Brazil. So Definitely my advice to guys traveling with like their hot girlfriend that wears thong bikinis, don't bring her to Brazil.
So classic.
And then you'll get swooped.
Wow.
You'll definitely get swooped.
Wow.
And so side note, just a little advice. And then, so then I come back and I do the tournament. I forget what it was. It was in Santa Cruz. It was an open.
The U.S. Open, Claudia Francis.
U.S. Open in Santa Cruz. And if I had won my match as a purple belt, I have a photo. Nick Diaz is sitting right there, just mean mugging. I lost the match or whatever. And Nick Diaz is my next opponent, which is like the closest I ever got to, you know, fighting one of my favorite legends. But I do have the photo of me like on the mats and Nick right like in his gi, like mean mugging both of us like he's next. So, so I come back in college now and still training, obsessed. And then I decide, I see the Osbournes on TV and I read that it's a reality show and they just got $25 million. And I watched the show. I was like, this is just people yelling in a mansion. Like I got a buddy with a bigger mansion whose stepdad yells way more than him. So I call up my buddy, Brody. I'm like, can I film a reality show about you? He's like, sure, bro. So I call my parents. I tell them, yeah, I'm going to take a leave of absence from college. Like, huh? I'm like, I can always go back. Like, it's just a leave of absence. I'm going to go do a reality show. So I go buy a GL2 Canon, which was like the hot camera at the time. And I show up the next day at Brody's house, wake him up with a camera. And he's like, oh my God, da da da. Ends up. So I move into Brody's ridiculous, like $100 million crib in Malibu. And Brody doesn't like to be, he likes to be better than everyone at everything. And he didn't like that I was better at jiu-jitsu. And, you know, so he was like, we're not doing jiu-jitsu anymore. Let's start boxing. And I am living in his house shooting a show about him. So I'm like, whatever. So initially I had the mats there and I was trying to get him on board, but he just didn't like that I was so ahead of him in that. And so he wanted to start with boxing. So we moved into boxing with the boxing coaches and I stopped training. Now I'm 22, probably. 20 years old. The show sells. We're on Fox. Amazing. Blah, 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 blah. Ends up, the mom gets divorced. Show gets canceled right after we start airing. So then I'm like, I need to get back on TV. I see The Hills airing. I'm like, I need to get on this show. So long story short, I get on that show. And at that time, I start, my Soderbergh hits me up now that I got some fame and some money and juice. He's like, you got to help manage Hickson's best black belt, this guy, Kevin Casey. time he was just known as KO. Now he's King Kevin Casey. So long story. We won't get there. I start managing him. We get a 6-fight deal with Strikeforce. So again, now I have Matt's back in my house, you know, training more jujitsu because he's over all the time. And Hickson starts now coming over because I'm more involved with, you know, I'm going to meetings with Scott Coker and bringing Hickson and trying to figure out how we can get Hickson involved in Bellator, So again, one of the biggest regrets of my life is Hickson's coming over to my house and he's moving, you know, couches and everything. And he's like trying to show me things, but I don't want to be the guy. Like, I just wanted to chill. Like, we're chilling. Like, come on, Hickson, like, relax. Don't worry. I'm not trying to get choked out on the carpet. Now I like want a time machine and be like, you stupid idiot. Like, you weren't, you know, but I think that's why Hickson kept coming over to the house. So like a few days a week for a long time, because I wasn't just trying to get moves from him and he would be trying to show me things. I'd be like, kick back, Hicks, we're chilling. Like relax. So again, hit myself on the head, but a real quick Hickson story about invisible force. Heidi, my wife, is my witness. He was like, let me show you something. I'm not going to imitate, try to sound like him, but imagine Hickson saying it. And he's like, come here. And he's like, run at me as hard as you can. Like, I'm like, huh? He's like, run at me. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, do it. So I run at him. He puts two fingers right on my sternum and holds me at a full sprint, like out of a weird Matrix, Neo, freaking Morpheus. I'm telling you, you can't even comprehend what I'm trying to explain here.
So you're running at him full force and then he just stops you with energy, like almost like lifts you like in puts you into place.
He's touching me. He's touching me as the two fingers on my chest.
You didn't tackle him? You didn't move through him with your running momentum?
The two fingers, whatever. And he said, this is the invisible force. And I was like, at one time I was so hyped on it. Like I even own the LLC Invisible Force. I should have kept it, but it cost money to own LLCs. Cause after that, I was like, we're going to do something with this. So then I decided that, you know, hopefully it comes out one day. Crone just called me the other day and asked me if I was cool, if he did whatever. And I was like, whatever you say, Crone. I spent about $250,000 to $500,000 on a film crew following Crone and Hickson all the way from Crone's, like right when he got his black belt to when he unfortunately lost Worlds as a black belt, and the whole journey through it, Helios passing when they were over. I mean, I thought
half $1 million bucks
to like for the budget to shoot this. Yeah. So, wow. And since he didn't win, I'm not saying that's why it never came out, but I thought that was the Academy Award because, you know, Hickson's saying you should have let him break your arm. I mean, it was so heavy. It was wild, but maybe one day it'll come out. Crone just hit me and was like, I'm working on with the footage. You cool with that? Because I gave them all the tapes. I didn't want to, because that was one of the deals when I first did the deal with Hickson and Crone, that they're like, we need all the tapes because of how he got screwed over with what's that film that he's in? That's with the fight, the one where he's in the water, the ice water.
Oh, choke.
Back yeah, in the day. Choke. So choke guys screwed him over. So he was like, and I was like, well, you guys can have all the tapes. So every time the crew would shoot, I just hand the tapes to Crone. So like, I never even saw what they shot. Let's just put it that way.
I remember when that same time, I think Crone was maybe competing as like a purple belt or brown belt at like Rancho Dominguez in California. And I remember that like vividly, like there was a full blown video crew just for him shooting him. I'm like, this is wild. Like there's like two camera, like legit cameras following him. Was that your crew?
Yeah, that was all my money that I wish I had, all due respect, put in a bank account so I wasn't broke right now. Guys,
$500,000 following jiu-jitsu, like jiu-jitsu royalty in a sense. Like that's
It would have won Sundance. If they're just such passionate individuals and like aren't in it for anything, but they're like, whatever. I'm not even going to try to figure that one out. But if it had been like 2021 jiu-jitsu cloud energy type people, we would have won the Sundance Film Festival with like, I mean, they had footage of Hickson and Krohn with some, this guy who's a specialist in Brazil on, they were running through the jungle and doing different animals of their training. So they would train like a tiger and then they would be the gorilla and they would do the full, like, I mean, you can't even comprehend the level of what's we filmed that didn't ever come out. That still is just heartbreaking to me, but whatever. I have no problem. I love you, Krohn. You obviously know what you're doing.
On that same side, Spencer, like what are the probably the three funniest stories that you have in real life? You just told us a couple of pretty funny ones, but what are some, like, three of the notable ones? Like, you don't have to give us a full rundown on
jiu-jitsu related,
jiu-jitsu and life, and, you know, in reality TV where they merged, you know, you had to take somebody down that thought they were like the toughest guy because they did wild card boxing for like 2 months. You know, I'm pretty sure you came across some pretty interesting characters within that world, you know?
Oh my gosh. So Brody and I, right when this was all happening, when we were getting famous, we go to Cabo spring break and we're sitting in the club. You know, Brody is the most legendary player I've ever witnessed, the amount of girls that would literally be attracted to this guy. So there was, I'm not exaggerating, I was going to say 15, at least 20, like straight out of Girls Gone Wild level type, you know, like you want them all at the table. They're all sitting there. So this guy, this punk dude, just so jealous, starts coming over, like he's in a wife beater, like just exactly what you are picturing. You know, it's that guy, like out of a movie. And he's like talking on shit. We're like, huh? Like, we're just sitting here with girl. Like, we don't even know you, bro. Like, relax. And he's like, you got a problem? Let's go outside. And this is when I did feel very, like, I did feel confident and, you know, stupid now. You know, I would try to avoid a situation like this. But, you know, I was like, okay, this guy is not leaving us alone. Let's go outside. So all of a sudden, though, he takes it to the next level and grabs a bottle. And I'm like, oh, we're cheating. Okay. So he's three stairs down of like leaving the club as he like grabs his bottle and holds it. So I do the full, you know, I've been sipping tequila, like feeling like Superman. So I do the full on action movie, Van Damme flying kick off like the top of the three stairs. Allegedly. Like, it's a fictional, this is in Mexico. It's a fictional story. And in the story, this movie, I would kick this guy if this happened, and he flies back, drops a bottle. And before he could even like get up from, you know, doing anything, I just come up right, not even too fast, just right behind him. And I just choke him out and put him to sleep and go back into the club. And it was just like the easiest, like 10 seconds. And years later, some girl was like, I was in Cabo, da, 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 da. That guy, our whole city was happy about that. Like, everybody's been waiting for that guy to like get a piece. Like, I guess it was, this guy had just been the notorious bully monster type dude. And it was like a city was happy. And so I felt like a hero in this movie. So that's like a quick little jujitsu, how just a simple choke, and you don't have to punch anyone in the face. Like, anybody else would probably kick him in the head, or, you know, you watch World Star and everyone's kicking people in the head, stomping people. Really, all you gotta do is just put somebody to sleep and they start shaking and they wake up like, what the F? And nobody's trying to, I think he even came back in the club and was like chill after, like, didn't, it's so scary getting put to sleep. Here's another funny story why people always say that I train, like all my friends say that I'm the most like the scariest person to train with, because I go so hard. And this is why, because back to my jiu-jitsu story. After the Hills, I moved to Santa Barbara and started training at Paragon with Frangia 6 days a week. And Frangia, my buddy Mike came by and wanted to train with us. And he's like, just don't try, you know, let Mike do things, you know, like, you know, let him learn, let him. I'm like, huh? He's like, just let him do things on you. Like, just, so I'm like not getting this because I'm always trying to go 100, 110. And all of a sudden, I wake up with the Frangia shaking my legs. I'm like, what happened? He's like, dude, why you let him put you to sleep? I'm like, you told me don't do anything. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, no, I mean, like, defense. I'm like, you said let him do things on you. And so that lesson I learned after getting put to sleep is I'm going 120 every time we train, because after you let you go light and you get to let somebody put you to sleep, you're like, no, thank you.
Oh my God. So on that same side, on talking about training, like that's how training was then. How's training like now for you, and why, what does it do for you now as opposed to what it did for you before? What makes it so close to you?
Yeah. Well, training now, COVID kind of killed jiu-jitsu for me. I appreciate everyone who keeps training, and I just have a job where they test me for COVID every 2 days because the Hills is back, and I get paid per weeks that I like film and appear. And if I were to get COVID, I'm minimum, you know, on quarantine for 14 plus days. I mean, obviously I don't want to get COVID regardless, but just on a business thing, I'm not about to, you know, once I wrap this season, I'm going to go in 1000% hard and finally get this black belt that I should have got a long time ago. But I was holding off on committing 1000% because the energy, when you're trying to get belts, you train so much harder, but the energy when you're trying to like sandbag and be like, I just want to be the best brown belt master to ever live. And like, I'm over that mentality. Like I kind of got caught in that where I wanted to be so good as a brown belt. But then I was like, who cares? There's no clout. Even if I were to go win the brown belt freaking Masters Worlds, like I need to get so good at black belt that I could win a black belt Masters World. Cause even if I were to win brown belt Masters Worlds, people would be like, oh, he's just a brown belt. And then obviously people always say something, but I like to hear what I think it in my head. And then, so even if I were to win black belt Masters, it'd be like, but it's Masters. So, I mean, it's lose-lose, but now I'm going to train so much hard just because I was like, I need my black belt. I've been doing this since I was 15. I'm ready to, you know, get real, real serious.
And what about on switching a little bit, Spencer? You 3 to 5 years that you've been kind of like building your business, and you've been always into like crystals and stones and stuff, and it's been like blowing up more recently. So how's that been for you? How's that going for you? And then also how's it dealing with it in the pandemic during this time?
Like I was saying when we first started the podcast, I owe our whole business really to your hustle, because it all happened because my wife was like, you can't buy any more crystals. And so I was like, well, I need to, I'm addicted to buying crystals. And she's like, well, sell some of your crystals. I'm like, I'm not selling any of my crystals. And she's like, and I'm like, what if I buy some crystals and then I sell those crystals and then I get to keep some of the ones I didn't sell? She's like, fine, but you have to sell them. So I kind of like took your strategy and I was like, I'm doing a drop right now. I got 100 crystals, and that night they sold out. I was like, oh dang, like I'm gonna start doing this. And then you know, now that was 4 years ago. I just saw my Snapchat memory, so like I was selling a crystal kit 4 years ago. And yeah, the pandemic, the first 8 months business was booming. I think because everyone got stimulus checks and everyone thought it was like this was just like a quick little thing. And you know, and now, you know, we went from 15 employees at one time to now we're down to Madison to like 5 employees. So, you know, it definitely, like a bad month was like 200K a little while ago. And now it's like, I would pray to the heavens to get back to 200K months. So it's definitely hurt the business a lot, but I mean, we are in like the craziest pandemic ever. So I'm being positive about it. And it's still, you know, beyond successful for my wildest dreams. And I just tell myself, this is going to end one day. And I'll look back and be like, man, our business survived, you know, economic crisis, a pandemic, da, da, da. So I'm being positive about it. Thank God the Hills is back. So that takes a lot of the pressure, you know, getting TV checks again is, you know, make it so it's like, oh, because the dumbest thing I did, which when instead of letting people go, when I had all those employees, I took on Shopify offered me like 300K, you know, where they would take a cut of my store, like Shopify Capital. And I took that money so that I could pay to keep all these people when I didn't realize like all these people are going to go on unemployment. And actually with the stimulus, we're going to make more money than I was even paying them, which is so funny. And so I took on that 300K, and now it's like got paying that off out of a cut of my store each day. It's like, oh my God. So like you said on your podcast I listened to not take money is definitely the goal. And I would do whatever you got to do if you're starting a business, not to like take on money. You know, I just thought, oh, it's no big deal, but oh, it's a big deal.
On that same thing, Spence, I think there's been a lot of things that kind of came across your plate back in, you know, when reality TV was popping and a lot of opportunities and stuff. What are some of the ones that you just kind of hit your head? You hit your head on the wall now. Besides the training, free privates with Hickson. What are two ones like iconic that you're like it passed your desk and like you just pushed it off and you wish you're like, Donald Trump's president now. Me and him were in the room, or you know, hey, so and so is now like
that's what the wealthiest
billionaire in the world. You know, like I don't know these stories, but you do. So
you just literally said like two or three of them. You said one of them that I wouldn't even have remembered. So they wanted me on Celebrity Apprentice. I was like cast and everything, and I didn't realize everyone has one meeting with Donald Trump just before you go on the show to like just confirm it. And this is when I was such an egomaniac lunatic, I guess, that I was like, they either want me or they don't. I don't have time to go sit with this Donald Trump guy. And you're like, I'm like, basically in my head, I was like, I'm a star. I know I'm a star. Like I got the number one hit show. Like I'm the most famous villain right now in the world. I'm more hated than OJ and Casey Anthony killing kids. And so like, I don't need you to tell me I'm not the you know, so that was my mindset. But like, I didn't understand network television. I was so naive to like a hit show on cable isn't a hit show on network where you're in broadcast and everyone's home. So, I mean, now people will probably be, you know, it's good for that. I'm not all over Google Images with Trump because I don't need any more hate than I already getting away from. Thank God. So probably ended up being good. You know, he's not everyone's favorite person. But that's one that you mentioned, Trump. The other one that literally I think about at least once a week. So we did this show on NBC called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. But from the jump, I went in there with the mindset that they were just going to pay me the quick, like 30 grand to quit and say, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here right out of, you know, right off the gate, like, oh, almost like I thought that would get press. And so Heidi and I were just going to quit right away. And we roll into the jungle, and it's a real jungle in the middle of nowhere, Costa Rica, took a helicopter in. And I'm like, okay, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. After like the night, I was like, F this, I'm not sleeping on this little freaking little, what are those things called? Hanging that, whatever. And they're like, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm like, huh? Like, not going to say because I signed an NDA, maybe it expired, but I'm not saying it's kidnapping or whatever, or holding me hostage. But they had my passport and they did not let me leave for a good 6 days of like trying to quit all day, every day, like call my agent, call like just nothing. You're in the middle of jail. There's nothing, like you're listening. You're like, how is this possible? How is this possible? Let's just say I did get a ridiculous payoff. Let's just say that. To like, you know, not talk about how this is not possible. But then once I'm out, it was such a big deal. And I guess how crazy I was in there because they were dosing me. Like this nurse would pop out of nowhere to like give me some pills to try to calm me down. Was not working. So they were just drugging me in the jungle. And so I was climbing up the palm trees and covering the cameras with like shirts and like demanding them bring me food. Cause you know, I'm like, I'm not eating rice and beans. So they would like sneak me like meals, da 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 da. So I get a call from the president of NBC and the head of WME, and they want me to go back in. Keep in mind now Heidi, my wife, has an ulcer that's so bad. We're in some Costa Rican hospital. So in a different world, I should have done something. Like I should have called her mom, flew her mom there to be with her. Okay, she's fine. She's with her mom now at a hotel. Like I just wasn't thinking. And I was just, you know, just I was making so much money from the hills and other things that it wasn't like greedy and desperate and broke energy like I have now. I'm not greedy, but I have broke energy. And So I get a call.
You're not broke, dude. You're not broke.
I am 100% broke. I'm the brokest person you've had on this podcast. So I get a call and they want to offer me $950,000 to go back in for like 2 weeks or something. And I'm already like back in is just down the hill, you know, like I'm right there. And I was like, F that, like you couldn't. And it's like, I think about how hard it is to get 950 grand nowadays, every day for the last like 12 years. Problem is when you're deep in the entertainment business and getting the fat checks and how fast they come at when you're that deep in La La Land, 950 doesn't sound, you know, life changing. And I just, and I thought the Hills would be on for this time. We were more famous than the Kardashians. Kim was getting edited out of scenes on the Hills, organizing Heidi's closet, like to try to understand like where my ego and brain was at the time. Like that gives you the gauge. But now obviously I'll take a time machine and be like, I'll go in for $950. So what do you keep cash? You know, so yeah.
You're like, Kim, while you're organizing Heidi's closet, do you want to like do something together, like on the side real quick?
Oh, I'm blocked 100% by now.
They don't know they might not know that you're talking about Kim Kardashian.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Anyways, Kim was. And then Kim's, when I said this on an interview years ago, Kim's publicist like denied that ever happened. Like I made it up. Thank God for MTV. They like dropped the bonus footage on the internet. Like you can like see it. It's like, ha ha. Liar ass publicist. Yeah. So, and then how I met you is I still laugh about all the time. And it's back to just when I think I know things and I'm just stupid. When you saw that I started training again and Instagram just kind of was happening, you barely were on it. And you DM me from like your personal account, a bear or whatever. And I was like, and you're like, hey man, so you're training. Like, I'd love to send you kimonos. And since I've been out of the game for a minute, all I knew to that at the time was like Corral kimonos. And I had all my like Corral grips. Corral kimonos. And I was like, oh no, I'm cool. Thank you so much. And then a few months later, I don't know how, but somebody was like, you need to get show your wool gi. So I go on the site and I'm always trying to buy them and they're selling out and I'm going against these bots and I'm like at war with the website. And then I'm like, oh my God, did that guy that DM me, was that for, and I went back all his DMs. I'm like, oh my God, it is. And I DM like, yeah, excuse me. I would like those yees that you offered and da, da, da. So that was like one of those moments. Also, I felt stupid, but glad I found your DM again.
Oh, that was so classic. Cause I think it was one of those times where it was like, you started training again, you're getting into it. And I think I said exactly what you just said. And I think like we hooked up sometime. I think I was like up in Santa Barbara or whatever, and like, or a tournament, something, we finally met up. And then I was like, yeah, Spencer's training. Like, you know, like celebrity from the Hills, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, is he, fuck, that guy's like, he's like a villain. I'm like, no, actually him and Heidi are like fucking super nice. Like, it's crazy how nice and cool they are. Like, and they're like, huh? Like what? I was like, no, like, I'm not even joking. Like, he's like, his energy is really, really good. It's like, it's kind of crazy, you know? But it's super cool to just hear you give perspective on like kind of being that deep in general, you know, just like probably a lot of people would be, but then kind of like reflecting too and just like, shit, like, hey, if I got that deal now, like, you know, I wouldn't mind hearing it. So that's kind of cool, man.
I know your listeners are probably a lot of jiu-jitsu guys. So I give the same, like my life lesson type, you know, even though it was all reality TV and media stuff and just, you know, I made so many of the wrong choices that I always say, like, I have like, that's why I am excited to be a dad now, because I have the book on like, son, I'll tell you what not to do. You just don't do any of these things. You go figure out the right things to do. So like, I'm always, you know, I'll take full credit in Edwin Najmi becoming IG, you know, jiu-jitsu star, coach him through that, you know? So I feel like I have brought my brain to jiu-jitsu and, you know, I try with Hunter, but Hunter just, you know, he's too, it's hard. Shout out Hunter Ewald. The Hawaiians have a different frequency. Like, it's easier with Edwin out here in LA, but like, I mean, I've been trying to get Hunter to, you know, be more of a, you know, out there. But it's a hard balance when you're a martial artist and also trying to be a self-promoter and like to stay a professional athlete. But like, I always try to tell all the guys I, you know, I train with and I'm around, like, it all is blended. Like, that's those days where, you know, you could just be a martial artist. Those are over. You have to be a businessman, a media personality, and a pro athlete. And it's so, that is the one thing I always feel like I've learned so much that I do want to help all my friends in jiu-jitsu because I want them to succeed. I know guys work harder in jiu-jitsu than anything I've ever seen in my life to be at the top. You know, it's, there's, I don't think there's any, you know, obviously MMA, you know, there's those guys work. It's different because it's not saying one works harder, but it's, I'd say MMA guys work that hard. And obviously it's just grappling across the board, which I'm now like you also helped me turn, as you would say, into a geek about, like, I'm so excited to watch Adolfo Vieira and Kynan. And I, like, you made me appreciate, you know, before I didn't even like before you, I didn't watch every flow grappling and fight to win and freaking all the, you know, submission. Like, so I appreciate you be like putting me on to like this, you got to follow this guy and this kid. Like, so many of these guys now, I mean, I've now known you like for years. So we've watched so many guys come up from like when you put me on to Mikey Lira, the twins. Like, so, I mean, the list is ridiculous. So I appreciate you for, because it is so fun to watch their journey as a fan, because these guys just keep getting better and better. And you're like, oh, like, that's unbelievable.
I'm getting close to closing, Spence. One, thank you for supporting the brand through this time. And I don't think many people don't know, but like, you're probably one of the like most hardcore loyal dudes and just like good dudes out there. And I truly appreciate you, man, always repping and supporting and being a good dude and good human, man. But in closing, three questions, and feel free to close and add what you want. But question number one, where do we buy your amazing crystals? Two, what jiu-jitsu or grappling guys, what kind of crystals should they buy if they're coming in brand new? And then at the end, what are some of the TV projects we should be looking out for, some of the stuff that you're working on for the future? So
pratdaddy.com has been my site. I just launched my son's luxury crystal brand, gunner-stone.com.
Wild.
I've decided that, you know, I want my son to always represent the best possible like version of me. And so it's like, I want the most insane crystals to be my son to be selling those moving forward, whether or not he chooses to do other things in life. You know, he'll always have gunner-stone.com with the most luxury crystal drip. So past 500 up to, you know, infinite prices will be him. And then under 500 will be prattdaddy.com. So for jiu-jitsu martial arts guys, if you want to believe in the energy, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the actual Tesla, not the car, you can Google his quote about what he said about crystals being alive and I'm not going to misquote. I should know it by heart, but I don't have brain cells left. So if you want to believe in the energy for martial artists, I would always say black tourmaline, because that's for protection. So you can either get black tourmaline from, it's out of Brazil, or my favorite black tourmaline is from Afghanistan. And then also, if you have a wife or a girlfriend and you want to just win, just go on my site and get anything that looks like pink and purple, and you're going to win. You get a girl a rose quartz, and you tell her, oh, I got this rose quartz, and you Google rose quartz and it tells you like a sentence about love or whatever. I guarantee you it's going to be the illest game you've ever, you know, just, oh, this energy has heart chakra, love, healing with a wink. Oh, it's a wrap, homies. It's a wrap. So if you're not going to wear a crystal, I promise you, a girl in your life, I have not met a girl that hasn't been happy to get a crystal. Promise you that. And then three, the hills, God willing, with COVID, we stay on track with all this testing. It's so impossible. We just started being able to film outdoors at restaurants. Now California shuts down outdoors. So, you know, it's just one step forward, two steps back, but we are in production and we're in too deep. And amount of money they're just spending on the COVID safety. This will air. So God willing, this summer. I prayed for the Hills to come back because I needed those checks. So I'm so thankful it came back. And that's it. And I'm so glad I got to be blessed with the Show Your Roll podcast. And then also, side note for all you Show Your Roll collectors, you know, I've gifted a few of the broke homies a couple, but if I hadn't gifted broke homies that truly needed a Show Your Roll, like I never gave somebody with like money a Show Your Roll gi, but like I have a lot of broke homies to train. If I hadn't given away gis, I'm killing all of your collections. Let me just tell you that right now. The one dude's beating me. What's the one guy?
You talking about 300, James Foster, the one that...
The
one that builds a Coliseum.
Yeah, him, that guy's beating me. And then the Footlock Specialist, I think he probably, maybe. What's that one dude? He ended up becoming a superstar, not as a collector. I forget, but there's a couple, but everybody else, I got you all beat. My whole closet is just geese and I have no room for like shirts and pants. My wife's always like, why don't we put these like in the garage? I'm like, no, I like to look at them. And the coolest thing about collecting kimonos is like my son, oh my God, like he's going to be like so dripped out when he starts training and he's at A2 at 14 because I'm so diesel.
He's going to be breaking out Generation 1 New Balance and Air Force 1 Nikes when he's like, and the kids can be like, what? You got version one from 2007?
Oh, no, he doesn't. We aren't going to care about shoes. All due respect to Shoe People. We just about that kimono life. My goal in life is to create Gunner to be one of the most famous martial artists to ever live. And I'm on it too. Like, he was doing arm bars at, I'm going to say, like 1 year's, like, you say armbar, he will jump any position, flying armbar, like crazy. And he's so strong, he will break, like, he'll break your arm at 3 right now. Watch out, players.
Love it. Spence.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for jumping on, man. I appreciate
it. My pleasure.
You have a blessed day, man. And say hi to Heidi and Gunner. Big hug for you, man.
My honor. You're the man.
Brother, talk to you soon, man.
Late.
Thank you for listening to another episode. Please like, subscribe. Until next week, see you then.